Baker Street, of course, 12 minutes past 11 on BBC Radio Sheffield. Well, if you go shopping in any town or city centre in South Yorkshire, the North Mids, you, chances are you'll see several people collecting money, trying to sell you copies of the big issue and so on. And you get the envelopes through the door asking you to give money to sick children, to animals. You get television adverts these days asking you to part with your brass. There seem to be more charities about than ever. But what's it all about, and how do you set up a charity if you want to, and are the right people charities, and how do you do it, and do individuals and small groups sensibly set them up, and, well, questions like that we're talking about this morning. Charities, in the company of Simon Gillespie, Director of Operations with the Charity Commission, Sylvie Brown, who is trying to set up a young MS support group in Sheffield. You remember Sylvie on this programme, I'm certain. And Bridget Cobbold, who's Director of the Western Park Cancer Appeal. The three in the studio this morning, thank you for coming in. Simon Gillespie, you and I talked to each other on Radio Sheffield, what, 6 years ago? You weren't who you are now, were you?
No, indeed. Then I was in the Navy and I was the captain of HMS Sheffield. We were doing a visit to Hull.
So why have you ended up doing this?
Well, I thought after about 23 years in the Navy, there was a bit of time for a change. And I saw the job advertised, and it's an important job regulating and assisting charities. And I really enjoy it.
Sylvie, you and I talked in this studio not that long ago, telling us the story of your, well, I don't know, mad leaps out of aeroplanes and things. What have you been doing lately?
Well, since I last spoke to you last summer, I've been to the Florida Keys with my boyfriend and swam with the dolphins, which was quite a major ambition. And I'm here really to talk about today about setting up a young MS support group initiative for young people with multiple sclerosis in Sheffield.
Like yourself?
Like myself.
Yeah. What about the latest, Bridget Cobbold, from you and the Western Park Cancer Appeal?
Well, it's very exciting for us at the moment because we next week are having a Dance for Life event, which is going to be raising money to build a young person's cancer unit at Western Park. And so we're encouraging people to dance all over the region for us and make a donation to the Cancer Appeal. It's vitally important that we do build a young person's cancer unit because at the moment there's no specialist provision in this region for them.
So what happens? They're mixed up with the grown-ups.
That's right. They're on wards with people perhaps the same age as their grandparents. And it has been shown that there is a recovery advantage, that people are more likely to get better and get better sooner if they're being treated with people of their own age.
So, three people talking about charities and related matters: Simon Gillespie, Sylvie Brown and Bridget Cobbold. I suppose I really ought to start, Simon, with you at the Charity Commission by getting the nuts and bolts of it together. What is a charity, according to the Charity Commission?
Right, well, the law is laid down in Act of Parliament that was passed in 1993, but essentially a charity is an organisation with an income of over £1,000 a year, or some form of permanent property, which exists to give some public benefit and exists to do that in its entirety. So you're not allowed to, for example, have half of an organisation doing charity and then half trying to make money for people.
And what difference does it make if I can persuade you to register me as a charity?
Well, it can make quite a lot of difference. Many members of the public see a registration number on the bottom of correspondence or on a collecting tin as a mark of legitimacy, and certainly we'd like to remark use it as such, which means that you can get easier access potentially to funders and also to donors and also to those people that you want to be the beneficiaries who see also that it's a reputable organisation. But in terms of the brass tacks, shall we say, charities get relief from all corporation taxes, so you wouldn't be taxed on any, quote, profit that you make, provided all that money is used for charitable purposes. And charities receive a minimum of 80% relief on their uniform business rate, for example, so that if you own some office space or a hostel or something like that, then the most rates that you'll pay is 20% of the normal rate.
So there's a direct financial advantage in the form of taxation. There's an indirect financial advantage in that you're a kind of kite mark if we can put your number on our leaflets.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely. And I think the public know that the Charity Commission is actually there to regulate and assist the sector. And they rely on us, if you like, to be the police officer on the block.
You're not to be the police officer.
They rely on us to be. That's
you do. Yeah. And what sort of people get turned down?
Well, sometimes it's because their objects aren't charitable. For example, I mentioned earlier wider public benefit, and although we wouldn't criticise something as not necessarily being a good cause, if there's an organisation set up, for example, to raise funds for one individual, a sick child, for example, that wouldn't be considered charitable because it's not a public benefit, although obviously it is a good cause.
And what about things on the fringe, religious organisations or indeed political organisations or people whose charitable work might be questioned by other people in the society they do it in?
Yes, indeed. Well, actually, the advancement of religion, both Christian and other religions, is actually a recognised charitable purpose.
Is it?
Political activity is not, though.
And what about education? There come rather shifty schools that manage to persuade us they're charities.
Well, persuade us they're charities. You know shifty schools, Roni, please tell us. Well, we'll have a look at them.
Some of them seem to exist for the privilege of the people who can pay to go to them rather than to raise the general benefit of the nation.
Yeah, this is a very contentious issue, but the advancement of education, for example, is a charitable purpose. What we look at within that is to try and make sure that there is a discernible public benefit in registering that organisation as a charity. But I also say at this point that, of course, advancement of education carries a multitude of things. And, for example, parent-teachers associations at schools are charities.
Are they? Are they registered charities then?
Many of them are now. We're working with their national organisation to bring many more of them into registration, yes.
And how would that help them?
Because it means they can get all the financial benefits, and also people know that the money that is raised is actually being used properly, and they have a means of actually regulating that expenditure.
And if people have any doubt about that, I mean, you say you are the policeman on the block, do people actually write to you and say, hold on, look at this charity that's got your number on the bottom of it, and look what it's actually doing?
Oh, yes, that happens very frequently. In fact, last year we undertook 1,200 evaluations of complaints, either that we generated ourselves because we monitor activity in the sector, or because members of the public or politicians wrote to us or phoned us. And if anyone's got any issues they want to raise on this sort of line, then we have a single inquiry line, and they can contact us, which is 0870-333-0123.
And as a final thought at the moment, Simon, how many charities are there registered through you?
Well, in England and Wales, which is our area of responsibility, there are about 185,000 registered charities. And just to break that down, in Sheffield, there are over 800. And in South Yorkshire, for example, there's over 2,300.
Really?
And it's a big sector. The income of those 185,000 charities is over £24 billion a year.
Blimey. Simon Gillespie, who's Director of Operations with the Charity Commission. I'm in the studios with Sylvie Brown and Bridget Cobbold. Sylvie, go back to your young MS support group in Sheffield. At the moment, there's no intention of it being registered as a charity.
No, not at the moment. We're starting small, really. We're following a need. Through the Hallamshire Hospitals, the MS nurses have seen that there's a need for such a group, really as a point of contact. So we're starting the group with a sort of positive and informative newsletter, which I've decided to take on the task of producing. And we're sending that out. And then it's up to the people in the group what they want to make of the group. I know that when I was diagnosed, I was told it came as a devastating blow. Although I already knew I had MS, to actually be told that I had it, it was very difficult, and I didn't really know where to turn for support. At that time, I probably wasn't ready to contact the local MS charities like the Therapy Centre or the MS Society. And I probably wasn't ready even to meet people with MS. But I think a young MS group without any pressure would have been very useful to me. Instead, I sort of tried to deal with it on my own terms, did a bit of nutrition, and then it sort of fell by the wayside, and I tried to get on with my life as best I could.
Was there another moment at which you said, actually, I can't do that, I do need the support of some of these other organisations?
That came much later. Obviously, everything came to a head, and I had to really face my condition and work out a strategy of how to manage it, really, and learn to live with it. But I spent a good few years running away, really, which I now look back and wish I'd had a point of contact.
Do you?
Yeah.
I mean, there'll be people listening to you now who may be in that same running away situation, and you're saying, come and talk to you.
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is, through starting with a newsletter, there'll be this contact, and maybe the people in the group would like to then form a pen pal service, or, you know, get some support, get all the latest information on therapies, everything that they can do to help themselves. And then maybe we're looking perhaps in January to meet up somewhere completely different, perhaps, maybe a pub or somewhere. We haven't decided yet. We will be looking for people to sponsor the group and a venue, and then we'll take it from there. It may take off. There may be a huge need for such a group, and then perhaps we're looking for funding outside of the MS Society. At present, it's just for the postage and the photocopying.
Mm.
And then, yes, I'd like to know all about how.
Well, we'll ask him about that.
Yeah.
What about the whole business of existing MS charities and ones in that area? Because there are several, aren't there?
Yes.
Do they not cover the ground already?
It doesn't. The MS Society is a very good organisation, but it does tend to be the older side of people that are a lot older who go to the meetings. Now, I don't know why that is. Well, when I was diagnosed, I just didn't seem to get... You got a few leaflets and things, but for some reason the message didn't get across that there was an MS Therapy Centre and the MS Society. And in my first newsletter, that's one of the things. I've done an article on the Therapy Centre explaining what it's about, how I've benefited, how others have benefited, and also the contact number and the place where the MS Society meet and what we're about.
The positive and informative Sylvie Brown on Radio Sheffield again.
Thank you.
So, Bridget Cobble, what do you make of that, and how does it relate to what you do at Weston Park?
I think it's tremendous that... I think what I should say is that there are different kinds of charities. There are charities where people are actually doing stuff themselves, and this is a prime example. There are other charities where they're enabling people to do things. And whatever you're doing, I think you have to find the best route to do it. I'm really interested to hear that Sylvia has gone down the MS Society route initially, because I think that often it's very difficult for people to be bombarded with information from various different charities. But there may come the point, as she says, when they need to do it, because they recognise that they're actually providing a different service.
Can you tell us something about the Weston Park Cancer Appeal? Is that a charity in its own right?
Yes, we're a registered charity. We've been registered for about 6 years now. And although we raise money almost exclusively for Weston Park, well, at the moment it is exclusively for Weston Park Hospital, we're not part of Weston Park Hospital, we're just associated with them. So we will provide funding for Weston Park Hospital in order to provide the icing on the cake, to enable them to do the extra work for cancer, be it the Cancer Research Centre that we opened last year, the Young Persons Unit that I mentioned a few minutes ago. But also we enable the doctors and the nurses in the hospital to carry out extra research projects into the care and treatment of cancer.
And why is it so important, you stress it very carefully, that you're not actually part of the hospital itself? Why does that need pointing out?
I think that it shows the independence. We have a board of trustees who manage us as a charity, and some of those trustees are people, they're senior doctors or senior staff within the hospital, but other people are external individuals, people who for whatever reason have got an interest in the treatment of cancer at Weston Park, either through personal reasons or whatever. And that means that the individual then can actually make a difference. They can give money to Weston Park Cancer Appeal, and we'll know that it isn't necessarily just the hospital who are saying this is how we will spend it. They know that there are external individuals who have an interest and can say, we're very keen on, take an example out of, snapping it out of the air, so prostate cancer. If there was a lot of pressure to do research into prostate cancer, it may be that the Cancer Appeal would be able to to give a push to say, this is what we would like to fund within Western Park. That hasn't happened as yet, but there's a potential for it.
What about the sums of money you were talking about? We heard from Simon, the colossal sums of money across South Yorkshire and so on. How much money are you involved in?
We are doing tremendously well because there is an awful lot of support for us. We need more, obviously. We're probably raising around £800,000 a year, every year. And of that, the vast majority of that is going into certain research projects. We do some care projects as well.
What's the vast majority? Is that, are you saying that in order that people don't say, yeah, but two pays Bridget Cobble's wages and things like that? Is that...
What I meant when I said the vast majority is that most of the money that we're raising to spend is being spent on research type projects. Mm. However, obviously a charity does need to pay my wages and the running costs of the charity. I'm very pleased to say that it's a very small amount for our charity. It's about 17 pence in the pound is going, and the way I would describe that is saying that if somebody gives us a pound, we can guarantee we'll spend at least 83 pence of that on research in the hospital and 17 pence of it on raising another pound in order to give
well,
it to the hospital.
Simon, does that become part of your work at the Charity Commission to work out what proportion goes where?
Yes, it is. And one of the things we look at when we scrutinise charities' accounts is the amount of money they're spending on administrative expenses. And if they're too high, then we'll investigate that charity.
Where does 17% fit in on that scale then?
So 17% in this area, because it's very difficult to get a general picture, because as you've heard two examples of sort of charities or charitable organisations, there are actually a huge diversity of different types. 17% sounds pretty reasonable to me.
Well, if you want to say very reasonable.
Great relief.
Sounds very reasonable.
Bridget, how do you go about getting this 800,000 then? How does it work?
A lot of the support that we get is from people in the local communities of Sheffield, the whole of South Yorkshire and North Derbyshire, who have had friends or relatives who've had treatment or who've had treatment themselves. People will set up events, they'll do a sponsored head shave or they'll organise a concert. So the vast majority of the money that's coming to us is someone who is grateful for the treatment they've had and they'll go and raise it themselves.
Off their own bat.
That's right. We'll give them the support. There is no way, I think, that if we were doing all of those events ourselves that we could raise that kind of money. So we're so dependent on the local community saying, yes, we want to help Western Park become a better research.
It's brilliant that they do it. Can you do the monitoring that makes sure all the money comes to you? I only ask this, and I shouldn't say this either, but my guess is that there will be some kind of charity, marathon-y charity things, not yours, where somebody who's a bit sharp could make quite a bit of money out of it.
We're constantly on the ball, and we do occasionally hear about people who are using our name, and we jump and deal with that immediately, because we have to make sure that our good name is kept good, so that people know that if they're giving the money to Western Park, it is going where we say it's going. And if somebody approaches us and says that they're going to be doing an event, we've got a system of supporting them but actually following up if we don't hear from them again. Say, how did it go? What happened? Do you need any more help? And generally then we'll find out what's happened with that event.
Mm. We're talking about charities in the company of Simon Gillespie, who's Director of Operations with the Charity Commission, Sylvie Brown, and Bridget Cobble. Sylvie, what chances are there that you will actually move your group into being a charity? You say you want to know how you do it if you want to?
Yeah, it's funny. When I was swimming in the swimming pool last week, this chap came up to me after having read The Star all about my story and the MS group. And he says, well, you know, if you want any funding, you know, I'm part of this trust. And
really?
part of the Freemasons, he says. And he says, you know, put a proposal together and I'll have a look at it and we can probably get you over £1,000. And it's funny. Because I have to be a charity, don't I, to accept over £1,000?
I don't know, Simon. What's the situation?
The legal position is that if it's over £1,000, you have to register.
Yeah. So, yes,
we'll try and make that process as easy as possible, though.
What would the process be?
Well, indeed. The first thing will be to get an application pack from us, which includes various information about what the responsibilities are. And I'm aware that you know, a lot of people may feel that they're put off by the the legal language. Unfortunately, of course, setting up a charity is a legal process. We try and simplify it as much as we can do. But there is an application form, and then people have to submit their governing documentation so that we know that the organisation is properly constituted. And then some supporting documentation. For example, we'd like to see some idea of a business plan to make sure that when a charity comes onto the register, that it's actually viable and likely to survive. But in some cases, of course, where there are particularly vulnerable beneficiaries, like children, then we'll do some background checks into the individuals that are attempting to set up the charity as well.
Do you check out if they're duplicating existing charities?
We have a look at that. Yes, it is. What we do at the moment, we have no statutory power to refuse a charitable organisation from coming onto the register unless it doesn't meet any of the other tests I've just described. But what we do is have a look at other organisations that are working that sort of area. And we'll suggest that people may actually get better value for their money, if you like, if they were to combine with another charity or to join another charity. But it's up to them, their choice, at the end of the day.
And without preempting it, do you have any advice to Sylvie about whether her group would be better off under an umbrella of a different organisation, or whether once she's accepted this £1,000 from the Freemasons, she should set herself up?
Just because I go swimming, yeah.
Nice, yeah.
It's a very difficult decision to make, and one of the great benefits of the charity sector, and you're hearing two very good examples of voluntary organisations at the moment, is that they are responding very, very quickly to local need. So the one thing we wouldn't wish to do is to say that you can't do it. I think it's up to you, Sylvie, to decide whether your particular area of interest and providing a service to younger people is actually so different. It sounds to me as if there is a particular case there, and I certainly wouldn't wish us to stand in your way.
Yeah, I think we want to work in conjunction with the MS Society and the MS Therapy Centre. And also, I mean, setting up a charity, that's a big deal. That's a big undertaking, isn't it? I mean, you need, like, a lot of people involved, and you need a management committee. And I've worked for a homeless charity, so I know a little bit about what a big undertaking it is.
You skidded over it, Simon, didn't you? But all the form and the governing documentation, all that stuff.
We actually provide a helping hand, because we do provide some sort of model governing documents so people can just fill in the gaps. And actually, a charity doesn't have to be big. I mean, I've mentioned the sort of big headline figures, but out of those 185,000 charities, about 70% have an income of less than £10,000 a year. So there are a lot of smaller charities around. The vast majority of charities that are registered are actually quite small, and we try and make the administrative burden as simple as possible.
Thanks for coming on, Simon. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. It's been a pleasure to talk to Sylvie Brown and Bridget Cobble. When we came in, Sylvie and I, we were suddenly presented with a pack of material from Weston Park, Field, and we're forced to take some badges in the Tunney South. What are they, and why are we wearing them with such pride? And how much do you want?
These pin badges, lapel badges, are £1 each. And I gave you yours, but a pound donation would be welcome if you want to give it. We're trying to encourage as many people as possible to wear their badge, to publicise the fact that Weston Park has got a cancer appeals, that we're raising money to help the local community. Cancer affects everybody in this community, and so we want to spread the word.
Well, this is the sound of me paying up. We're reluctantly. So we're not in your hand in your pocket, but there.
I think so. My mum actually had breast cancer, and she was treated at Weston Park.
Who could refuse it? Thank you very much. Thank you both ever so much. Best of luck. So we'll keep in touch, won't you? Let us know, Bridget. Thank you very much indeed.
Take that quid. I will do. Thanks.
The Pharisee. In a few moments on BBC Radio Sheffield, your chance to win yourself a digital alarm radio. I've been talking to Simon Gillespie, Sylvie Brown, and Bridget Cobbold.